Hello, my friends. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show. Some countries are disappearing. I don't mean the physical country, but I mean the nation. Their reproduction rates are so low that they are beginning to fade away. Japan is an example. Germany, it might be an example. Question is the United States an example? It's not the question, or one question is the United States such an example? A man who has given a lot of thought to the subject is Jonathan Last, who writes for the Weekly Standard, which I tout regularly here. And his book is What to Expect When No One's Expecting. Good title. America's Coming Demographic Disaster. Jonathan Last, welcome back to the Dennis Prager Show.
Dennis, it's great to be here.
Oh, that's good. Sir, is Japan disappearing?
Oh, yeah. Boy, is it. By 2100, if Japan were to suddenly double their fertility rate from where it is today, just by magic, Japan would, by 2100, lose only 30% of its population. If Japan's fertility rate were to stay where it is now, and all the evidence suggests that it probably will, they will lose 58% of their population by the end of the century. That's an astonishing thing. Already in Japan, last year, they had more adult diapers bought than baby diapers. In just 40 years, there will be a 100-year-old for every newborn in Japan. And it's driven the country to really astonishing length. And it's created a system of generational warfare there because it's really become a zero-sum game. Just last week, the finance minister in Japan said publicly that it was time for the elderly Japanese to, quote, hurry up and die. He said this, which is remarkable in its own way, but he didn't lose his job, which is even more remarkable. I mean, you could imagine if the Treasury Secretary said that here, he'd be out on the bricks by the next day. But over in Japan, this is the new reality, and it's like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome over there.
What do the Japanese say is the reason?
They haven't really figured this out, and I don't blame them. It's not because they're stupid. It's complicated. To a large extent, what they have is a marriage problem. The Japanese culture, if you look back, 1,000 years, has been hot and cold on marriage, hot and cold on divorce. But since the 1960s, they've really begun to shun marriage at high levels. And as they begin turning away from marriage and having fewer marriages per 1,000 people, their divorce rate has shot up as well. And so when you have all of these things happening in concert, you also have a society which really has a deep adherence to abortion, which, by the way, frankly, the West bears a lot of responsibility for, because after the end of World War II, the West pushed liberal abortion laws on the Japanese, because here in America, places like the Ford Foundation and the Planned Parenthood Federation were obsessed with overpopulation from the Asian countries. And so, Americans bear, I would say, a large measure of blame for that. All of this has contributed to this culture over there, which is increasingly almost asexual. There was a survey done a few months ago over there where, a group of 15 to 18-year-old boys, 26% of them expressed no interest in girls and no interest in sex, and in fact said that they found the idea of sex repulsive. This is not the normal attitude for 15 to 18-year-old boys. And it just...
What percentage of them said this?
26%. And this just points to once you start having fewer babies, and once you wind up really below the replacement level, into the level that demographers call lowest low, that's anything below 1.4. And the Japanese have been around 1.3, 1.2. That's the average number of children born to a woman over there. Once you're below that number for a couple of generations, it warps the entire society's outlook on the world.
Wow. What about Russia?
Russia's worse in a lot of ways. In Russia now, there are 13 abortions for every 10 live births.
What is our rate in the U.S. on that? Do you have any idea?
Over here, I think it is one abortion for every 3 live births.
And they have 13 for 10?
13 for every 10. That's 30% more abortions than live births. I mean, when you think about that number and what it says, I mean, take aside what it means demographically, right? Take aside what it means for your fertility rate. Just put that off to the side for a moment. What that tells you is that it is a culture which has lost the will to live. I mean, it is a civilization which is saying we no longer have the will to continue to repopulate ourselves. It's an astonishing thing. The Russians are not blind to this. Vladimir Putin, you know, God love him for all his other problems, he has been obsessed with Russia's demographic decline for a long time.
Well, he's a nationalist in the purest sense.
Right.
So he believes in greater Russia. He would. What about Germany?
Pretty bad in Germany, too. I feel bad, Dennis. I'm here with all the doom and gloom. Over in Germany, the fertility rate is about 1.35 right now. They are already facing depopulation, even though the Germans have a large immigrant population. They have an enormous population of Turkish immigrants. Even with all that immigration, Germany has real problems. If you look at the entire, and you see this in being manifested in interesting ways in German society, one of which is the field of urban planning in Germany. You know, urban planning is the science of building cities and, you know, planning out communities. Well, now in Germany, the field of urban planning is working on how to downsize cities. What, you know, how do you manage it when you have schools that are no longer being used, when you have apartment buildings and factories that are abandoned? And so how do you go into a city like Hoyerswerda and take out five city blocks and turn them into parks and green space, but still make the city sort of coherent, as a civil engineering proposition? They have a wolf problem, actually, in the eastern part of the country now. Wolves, for the first time in 400 years, are sort of returning, coming out of the woods and now being seen around population centers because there literally just aren't enough people left to scare the wolves and make sure the wolves know that they belong in the forest, not running down Main Street. The state of Westphalia in Germany has a program now where they take, because they don't have enough nurses to take care of all the elderly because they have more old people than young people. And they have a surplus of prostitutes because they don't have enough young people to, you know, keep all the prostitutes in business. So it is a state-run program to take prostitutes and train them up and turn them into nurses for the old folks' homes. I'm not making this up.
No, I know you're not, and I am particularly silent, as you can observe or hear, because this is so important and you command these facts so well. I know Spain has a big issue, too. What are the countries that are least repopulating?
The countries which are least repopulating, you mean the countries that are furthest on the road to demographic ruin?
Correct.
The people who are going to go over this cliff first are the South Koreans and the Japanese. And what you look at when you're trying to figure out who's in the worst shape, you're looking at two things. You're looking for whose fertility rate is the lowest. And then you're looking at who got to the lowest fastest, which is, so if you think back to, you know, your high school calculus, you're looking for the DXDT, the slope of that curve.
Just what I was thinking.
I know. You know, you're never, talk math on the radio.
That's right, yes.
I'm sorry. And so the South Koreans have gotten to where they are, which is at about 1.1, one of the lowest fertility rates ever seen.
Who is 1.1?
South Korea.
What is North Korea?
It's funny. We don't really, all we know about,
I have to believe it's less.
Tell us, and they tell us that they are close to 1.7, but who knows?
Well, even if they're close to 1.7, a fair number of them will die early before they have children.
Because life expectancy
is
so bad.
Yeah, they'll be in, you know, re-education camps and concentration camps. So Japan, South Korea, Russia?
Russia's pretty bad, not as bad. Japan, South Korea, Singapore. Singapore has it terribly. Singapore has recovered to 1.3 from, they were close to 1.00, which is one of the lowest fertility rates ever seen in human history, actually. And Singapore is an interesting case because that is a country which did it to themselves. In the early 1960s, the Singaporean government, an authoritarian government, thought that they were embarking on this project of modernizing the state, that part of the key to economic progress was to cut their fertility rate. Their fertility rate was about 6.
All right. We'll get the rest of that story in a moment. I need to remind people I'm speaking to Jonathan Last of the Weekly Standard. He is an author who knows how to speak. Not common. What to expect when no one's expecting America's coming demographic disaster. We haven't even touched America yet. My big question is why, and I want to hear his answer. His book is up at DennisPrager.com, and this is The Dennis Prager Show. Hello, my friends. I'm talking to a writer at the Weekly Standard, Jonathan Last, and he's written an extremely important book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster, and he writes like he speaks very directly and clearly. And despite the 400-page length of my book, you know I tend to prefer under 200 pages. And his is. And the book is up at DennisPrager.com. We've been talking about Japan. I mean, the statistic that you gave, for example, that there are more adult diapers than baby diapers sold in Japan is about as telling a little anecdote as I have ever heard. And Germany and Russia and the Koreas. And now you were talking about Singapore, where this low birth rate has been self-induced. This was not imported from the West.
No, it was not. And Singapore is sort of, you know, demographers obsess a little bit about Singapore because it is a unique example in this way, even though, you know, I mean, it's not a real country. It's sort of a little nation state, you know, a little city state. So the Singapore government sort of imported Chinese-like measures, not a super coercive one-child policy, but they were strongly encouraging their people to have fewer babies. They would punish people who had more babies by taxing them. They were, I would say, very aggressive in supporting the idea of abortion. And they were so successful that their fertility rate dropped by 70% in a single generation. And it really freaked them out, so much so that within 20 years, they turned off all of this sort of anti-baby machinery that they had ginned up within the government in terms of policy, and they threw it into reverse. And this is the reason demographers are so interested in Singapore, because the Singaporean government tried to basically think about an autocratic state which is trying to force its people to have more babies. And so they wound up handing out these giant cash awards for people who had a second and a third child. The equivalent, when I say big cash award, I mean like 10,000 American dollars. They would give preferential admissions to schooling to people who had a third child. They even, because the housing in Singapore is government-run, if you had a second or a third kid, they would make sure that your grandparents could move near you so that you could have the grandparents watch your kids while you're going.
And did it work?
And no, and not only did it not work, but in fact the fertility rate kept falling. And all of this was happening while the Prime Minister of Singapore was making public speeches that really would make Rick Santorum sound like a hippie. And they talked about how, you know, it was important for people to get married and not get divorced. They, you know, the government was talking about publicly about how bad illegitimacy was and how illegitimacy was not something that should be celebrated. They were talking about how it would be good for women to stay home and take some time off from work to raise children when the children were young. I mean, all sort of, you know, deeply conservative, orthodox ideas. And it just didn't work. And what this shows is that government can only affect fertility in one direction, unfortunately. And that's
government that's really can scary. Do a lot more damage than good.
Yes. I know conservatives are shocked to hear that.
I almost fell off my chair when you said it. Exactly. Now, so again, I asked the question, who's the leader in disappearing? You had you mentioned the Koreas. Japan was up number one, I think. Russia is up there. Germany, Spain. Who else?
So think about this. If you look at that graph, you know, with everybody marching like little lemmings off the cliff, you're going to get the Japanese, the Koreans, Singapore, China, all falling and teetering off first, and then it all sort of marches westward from there. Then we hit Eastern Europe, then we eventually hit Western Europe, and America is in the enviable position of falling off, not quite last, but we're towards the I would say the back of the middle of the pack there.
Who is most reproducing? Is it Palestinians?
Palestinians and actually the Nigerians. And so when you look at the West Bank, and you can understand why in the West Bank, right? It's because, you know, basically everybody in the West Bank is being supported by the United Nations welfare. There sort of are no costs to having children because you just keep getting paid for doing it. And in Nigeria, I actually haven't looked closely at Nigeria, so I couldn't tell you why, but the Nigerian fertility rate is still up around 6. They're one of the few countries that has not.
It would be Nigeria is half Christian, half Muslim. It would be very interesting to see which group is reproducing, or whether it's universal.
But and that's about it. What you have to realize is that 97% of the people in the world live in a country where the fertility rate is in decline.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come to the U.S. Obviously. Do you have a general theory that explains most countries, if not all?
Well, I do, but it's not. It's real general, and the general theory is this. So when you look around the world, there are some things which are universal factors, right? Like when you move from rural living to city living, that decreases fertility. When the infant mortality rate falls, that decreases fertility. When you have increasing levels of education, this again decreases fertility. But then every country has its unique things. You know, like in Russia, alcoholism actually plays an enormous role in this because the Russian men are drinking themselves to death. And if you're a 20-year-old Russian man now, you only have a 50-50 shot of living to 65. The sort of public health side of Russia basically looks like Afghanistan or Chad. It's really pretty grim over there. And in America, you have all sorts of problems pertaining to religion in the public square, pertaining to the health of marriage and the institution of marriage. And one of the things you notice when you look around the world is countries where fertility is in decline, you never see a healthy marriage culture. You always see a marriage culture which is on the ropes. And that, of course, makes sense if you think about it, right? You know, most people, of course, there are exceptions, but most people, you know, want to get married. Even if they don't do it, they want to get married before they have a child. And, you know, where you see strong marriage cultures, you see people hanging on a little bit better.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine a couple in France, let's say. And which country is it that the president lives with a woman he's not married to? There's a major Western country. Yes, yes. Oh, God, I think I mentioned it on air. I'm going to look it up. It might be France, in fact. It might be Hollande, but I'm not certain.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. They wouldn't care. But the point that I want to make is it's hard to imagine such a couple with 6 kids. That's my point.
Right. Well, this is, you know, here's something interesting. In America, religious belief is an enormously predictive. Religious practice, I should say, is enormously predictive of your fertility. And we have this giant longitudinal survey in America called the General Social Survey with 17,000 respondents. And you're able to sort of go into the data, if you're a nerd like me, and slice and dice and look at it in different ways. And one of the things I did for the book was I went and I looked at women by number of children ever born and then cross-tabbed that out by church attendance. And what I found was that for women with 4 or more children, the percentage of women with 4 or more children who never went to church was literally 0.
Yep. Hold on. Stay on. This man has an important message, and he knows his stuff. The book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting, it's up at DennisPrager.com. Jonathan?
Yeah, hey, Dennis, am I filibustering here? I feel like
I'm crashing
your show.
No, on the contrary, you're riveting. And it's very rare. It's very rare. And so what I'm aiming for, which is also rare, is to do it for the entire hour and then replay it at a future date, which is great for you, my friend.
You are paying for. I've got 3 kids under the age of 4, so you're paying for a year of Montessori school for me.
Just say I'm paying for them. Don't start me on schools. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But what I wanted to tell you is, don't say anything that dates the show.
Okay.
That it's winter. You know,
Someone
President
said
Obama said yesterday, or the Super Bowl. That's all I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Okay, in that way, we have what I call an evergreen, and they're tremendously valuable hours for me in case I have to miss an hour or miss a show, and they're great for the person I have on.
Well, that's just great for me, and I'm grateful for it. And I really do. Please try to, like, you know, rein me in and direct me. I want to be...
No, I would. You answer what I ask. And you have... No, you're the perfect guest, okay? So, you know, and I'm saying this, and I don't even have a request to make of you. That is how sincere it is. All right, so we'll be back in a moment.
Great.
Okay.
Returns from break in 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Welcome back, my friends. This is Dennis Prager, and I'm with a guest who is just keeping me riveted. He's Jonathan Last of the Weekly Standard, and his book is What to Expect When No One's Expecting, America's Coming Demographic Disaster. We haven't even gotten to America, and it's entirely my, I wouldn't say fault, but my responsibility, because I wanted everybody to hear what's going on in the world and see if there's a pattern. That's all. That's my job in life, is to find patterns. And you began by saying there is a certain pattern, and it had to do, I guess, in the West, or this would include Japan and the Koreas, religious attendance.
Right. And in America, we track this really, really closely, because we have a lot of good data on it, a lot of good research, which shows how often people go to church and whatnot. In other countries, we, you know, they have their own data. I would say it's a little more loosey-goosey, depending on where you look. Overall, what you can see is globally increasing secularization. That is, I think that's not news to anybody. But here's the really interesting thing about America. If you go back to the early 1900s, the professional demographers were very interested in fertility by religion. And what they observed was big differences based on religious sect. Catholics had more children than Protestants, Protestants had more children than Jews, and so on and so forth. Those differences, those sectarian differences, persisted until the 1950s or 1960s, when suddenly they disappeared, and we had a new phenomenon emerge. And that phenomenon, which is, this is all sort of part of my grand unified theory, that phenomenon was that there was suddenly no sectarian difference, but there were enormous differences based on whether or not you went to church.
Yeah, if you were actively religious.
And so what you find then suddenly is that a Presbyterian and a Methodist and a Catholic and a Jew and a Mormon, they have the same fertility rates, or roughly the same fertility rates, depending on church attendance. So people who show up on Sunday, you know, if you go not at all, you have one fertility. The lowest fertility rate is the people who never go to church at all, you know, the non-believers. If you then go, you know, on Christmas and Easter, basically, you're a step up from that. If you then go once a month, you're a step up from that. And the people who actually show up at services every week have, in fact, a very sustainable fertility rate. They're above the replacement level. They're at 2.3. And it's fascinating, and I think it speaks to, and this is that grand unified theory, it speaks to the power of belief. And what it turns out is it doesn't even matter all that much what you're believing in, because the root of all of these beliefs, the root of Judaism, the root of Catholic thought, the root of Protestant thought, is that there is something bigger and more important than yourself out there, that this moment that you are in, it matters, but it is not the most important thing. And that ultimately is what gets people into having children, because when you look at all the other evidence about children, you look at, you know, how much they cost, you look at what they do to people. Actually, there's a ton of research on this. It shows how having children makes you statistically significantly less happy. All of these things are why people who are tethered to this moment, who are tethered to the now, have started turning away from having children.
Before your book, I have been arguing this. It's for years, decades, that look to secularism, not to affluence, for the reasons. The primary reason. It is so good to have someone who has the evidence to hear this vindicated. It's another example. I'm just saying this to my audience, and you're allowed to, you know, listen in. You're welcome to listen in. if one were to ask me what is the basic theme of all my broadcasting and writing, I would argue ultimately that it is this phrase, the consequences of secularism. We know the dangers of too much religion. We are oblivious. We don't even entertain the possibility that there could be too much secularism. And Japan is profoundly secular. South Korea is becoming profoundly secular. Singapore, likewise. I've been to all of those places, and I've studied them. And Russia, of course, has religion. Religion has been extirpated by 90 years of communism. And so, of course, Western Europe is, and now in the United States. It's almost like the religious shall inherit the earth, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And in fact, the one example there is of reversing this trend is specifically religious. And we can talk about that if you'd like. I don't want to force it on you. But
you're not forcing anything. I'm just totally riveted here. What to Expect When No One's Expecting, the book by Jonathan Last, is up at DennisPrager.com, and we continue. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show. This is very big stuff. I feel, and I'm certainly not on this level, but I just say I feel somewhat like Jeremiah the prophet, prophesied very bad things, saw them happen when they could have been avoided, and you're vindicated, but you don't feel good about it. The number of foolish things that the baby boomers were taught and then advocated is so much greater than the number of wise things taught and then communicated by my generation that it staggers the mind, and it gives you an idea of what I mean by when I say that leftist ideas have almost always been ruinous. They may not happen, the ruination, if that is a word, may not happen overnight, but it happens. God, were we warned in the 60s and 70s about overpopulation, the population bomb, those bestsellers. People took it seriously, and now countries, nations are disappearing, which probably doesn't bother many environmentalists, but it bothers those of us who actually love people more than forests, or at least love both and love people more. Jonathan Last has written this book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting America's Coming Demographic Disaster. The future is already seen in places like Japan, as you have heard. And the point is, within the United States at least, people who are religiously active are far more likely to have children. You made a very telling little point where I didn't intervene because I wanted you to continue, that children don't necessarily make you happier. So that's probably true. That is probably true. Maybe in the long run there is an increase. But the point is that those who live for higher ideals, as you pointed out, a transcendent reality, not just the moment, feel that it is their obligation to have children. So it's a big difference. What's the demographic disaster that your book discusses regarding the U.S.?
So the demographic disaster we face here in America is that we are very quickly approaching a moment as our fertility drops, as immigration is going to begin to dry up, because recall, fertility rates are dropping everywhere. They're dropping even faster south of our border than they are here in America. And so within 20 years, all the countries in Central and South America will have sub-replacement fertility rates and will probably no longer be sending masses of immigrants our way the way they have for the last 30 years. And so our age profile, which has already begun to do this, is going to continue to invert. So you wind up with more old people than young people. And so this then sets off a chain reaction. You know, the first thing it does is what we're already seeing. It stresses your entitlement system. It stresses Social Security. It stresses Medicare. The second thing it does, and we know that it does this because we have watched it happen in Japan, we've watched it happen in Greece, is it throws your economy into massive, prolonged stagnation. Now, recall the 1990s in Japan, everybody thought that was the lost decade. It wasn't. That was the new normal, and it was brought about, most economists in Japan believe, in large part because of their demographic troubles. And part of the economic stagnation is that you wind up with shrinking demand for just about everything except for healthcare. Your capital pools shift because with fewer young people who are investing aggressively and looking to spur innovation because they have long-term investment horizons, you wind up with older people who are looking to protect their investments and then draw them down. And so you have economic stagnation. You have a zero-sum game between sort of the older people who are consuming entitlements and who need support, frankly, and a younger base of workers whose taxes then have to support them. And so you now have to choose, well, do you cut benefits for the older people or do you increase taxes on the younger people, which then would set up this vicious cycle where you make it harder for them to have the next generation of workers, which is what economists call babies, right? Economists call babies future taxpayers. And then on top of it all, you have the problem with defense. So where does your defense budget go? In America, we're already facing this. This is what President Obama is trying to do, is to begin to roll back the defense budget and shift that into the welfare state. But then there's a human component to that as well. Where do you get the bodies? If your cohort of 18 to 24-year-olds, your prime military age, if that shrinks, you have a smaller pool of people to draw on. Now, again, taken in isolation, if America was the only country in the world going through this, you could see how we could muddle through. You could see how we could only have, so maybe we'd have 30 or 40 years of stagnant economics, but we could muddle through that maybe. We could sort of rob from Peter to pay Paul with our entitlement system. But the problem is, since it's happening everywhere, in not just places like here, but places like, as we've spoken about, Russia and China, which are inherently unstable, the world itself destabilizes. And you can very, very easily see how the wheels could fall off the cart. Demographers will tell you this. There is no precedent in recorded human history of societies experiencing long-term peace and prosperity in the face of a shrinking population. It has not happened before. And so if you're one of the environmentalists or one of the liberals who runs around saying, this is fine, don't worry about it. Look, maybe it's true. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you that I know we're going to be doomed. But what I can tell you is that to believe that it's going to be fine, you have to believe what I've always thought are the five most dangerous words in the English language. This time will be different.
Wow. Do you see any reason for hope?
Well, not really. here. Would you like me to be hopeful? I can be hopeful.
No, not at all. I don't patronize my audience with false optimism.
So the hope that there is that cultures change, sometimes for the worse, but sometimes for the better. When you're conservative, you don't see all that many betters in the world. If we were to jump back to 1935, we would see that the fertility rate had been falling for really almost since the founding of America. And by the 1930s, we were very close to the replacement rate. We were around 2.3, 2.5. And you would look back at 130 years of history, and you would say there is no reason to believe that the fertility rate will increase. But then, beginning in 1946, it did. And it stayed increased for 20 years. You and I know that. That was the baby boom.
All right, hold on there. We'll talk about that and final thoughts when we return with Jonathan Last. Get the education you should have gotten at PragerUniversity.com, then join the debate at our Facebook page, facebook.com/PragerU. I'm Dennis Prager. Everything, ultimately, just about everything, emanates from values. During the Clinton years, I remember I responded to his slogan, "It's the economy, stupid," with "It's the values, stupid." Republicans don't often know that. They know it more than Democrats, but they don't often articulate it. And here is one of the great examples. The declining birth rate, which is equivalent, I don't know if you put it this way, but when you told me about Japan, I think you write in your book something to the effect that it is analogous to the number of people killed in World War II in Japan.
That's right. It's very close. And, you know, I mean, these things, it's amazing because this is like the end of Western civilization. I don't mean the end is like the finish up, but the sort of the ideological end point of it is, you know, becoming so taken up in the day-to-day that you no longer...
Well, God is irrelevant. It's been rendered irrelevant in Western Europe.
Irrelevant. And so you wind up with just shrugging.
Well, that's
why
right.
Why should we
eat, drink, and be merry, don't have children, and dine out as often as possible. Off air, and I almost never note that, but we have very little time. There is a place that has increased its birth rate. Tell us about it.
There's only one country in human history which has had success at bringing back its fertility rate from lowest low to very near replacement, and that is the country of Georgia. And what happened there, and this is fascinating, is their fertility rate plummeted after the fall of the Soviet Union all the way down to 1.3, and so the patriarch of the Georgian Orthodox Church, Ilya II, they're a very religious people, he stepped up and he said that I will personally baptize the third-born child of anyone in this country. And beginning the very next year, there was an enormous boom in the fertility rate in Georgia. They are all the way back, almost at the replacement level. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And his mass baptisms are now like a staple of Georgian life. This shows, and I think this makes liberals uncomfortable, this shows the power of religion in the public square and the power that religion has that really public policy and government simply do not have.
That's correct. You're doing a yeoman service. What to expect when no one's expecting America's coming demographic disaster. Jonathan Last, you speak as well as you write, and that's a high compliment.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
You're very welcome. Think about it, folks. What good ideas have come from that part of the spectrum? You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show.